We are working on a biblical timeline. As everybody comes on in, we're in the third week here. As we get started, I wanted to share something with you. I don't know how that got up there, but I was pretty excited yesterday. My alma mater, Little Fried Hardeman, won the national championship yesterday. I was really excited about that. I'll just share that real quick blurb with you. As their small, tiny school, and somehow were able to win it last night. So excited about that. Huh? All right, I'll take the knife out of my back. No, but excited about that. All right, so let's get back into our study. We're looking at the last week of Jesus' ministry here on earth. Last week we were discussing those first couple of days on the Friday, Saturday before his crucifixion. He comes to Bethany. It's there where Mary anoints his feet. It's also there where the crowds are coming out to see him. What's interesting in John 12, this is the kind of end of his public ministry. And the beginning of it transitions in chapter 13 into the private ministry he has with his disciples. But you see those crowds coming. It's right after that, on Sunday, a week before his resurrection, that Jesus comes into Jerusalem on the back of the donkey. It's often labeled properly in Christian tradition is Palm Sunday. That's when they're putting down the palm leaves. And then as Luke 19 brings that to a close, we read about Jesus mournfully looking out at Jerusalem and weeping over these people that he so desperately loves. And yet so many of them have refused to accept him. And so that kind of ends our Sunday, and we get into Monday moving forward. If you go to Mark chapter 11, and that's where I want to start. You read Mark chapter 11 and Matthew 21, you've got to do a little deeper study to understand kind of the timeline here. And as we move forward, I think you'll see why. So I'm going to be referring a lot to Mark 11, Matthew 21, and so on as we go through these. You'll notice that there are some things that Matthew gives us more detail than Mark. But then there's some other ways Mark gives us more detail than Matthew. And you'll notice that, I think, as we move forward. But in Mark 11:11, the text tells us that right after he comes in to the city, it says on the following day. So we've noted this before, and it's just important to be reminded. The Gospels are not always really concerned about chronological order. Except for when. Well, yeah, but in just their writing, it's whenever you see a marker like you do in verse 11, what is verse 11, what does it tell us right off the bat?
It's like
the following day, right? He's marking time by doing that. When he does that, he's being very specific. And Mark actually tends to do this here, at least, more than Matthew does. And again, just keep that in mind. But Mark is very specific. The Holy Spirit says through Mark, on the following day, he entered the temple. I'm sorry, I said it was right away, but it's not. And he entered Jerusalem and went into the temple. And when he looked around at everything, I'm sorry, I was reading verse 12. Verse 12 is where it gets into the, on the following day. Got myself mixed up there, sorry. But it's right after the palm things, after he comes into the city, the text tells us in verse 11 that he enters on into Jerusalem. Save verse 12 for a minute. I don't know why I jumped there, my eyes. And he went into the temple, and when he had looked around at everything, as it was already late, he went out to Bethany with the 12. So, not a lot of information, but you notice the first place he goes to is the temple. Again, we're in the last week of Jesus' life. I wonder what that experience was like. Think about what the temple represents, and this will come up as we move through this, but what does the temple represent biblically about the relationship of God with the people? What did the temple represent to them?
Where God met with them.
It's where God's presence was. It was the place where atonement would take place. The temple is, of all the places in the world, the most sacred place for an Israelite. The temple is the holy place of God. And so now you have God, Jesus, here with what's right in front of him coming into the temple in this last week. Do you think maybe his mind is focused on that experience and what that must have been like? So he goes into the temple. All right, so hold your place there. So let's mark 11. Let's go to Matthew 21. This is where it gets a little bit harder to get a chronological order. All right, so if we go to Matthew 21, and let's look. Okay, so what's those first 11 verses cover? What? Again, the triumphal entry of Jesus into Jerusalem. Verse 12, though, is a little different, isn't it, from Mark 11:11? So it says in verse 12 that Jesus entered the temple and drove out all who sold and bought in the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold pigeons. He said to them, "It is written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer,' but you make it a den of robbers." And the blind and the lame... Okay, we'll hold off there for a second. So just looking at those verses, it appears as though on this first time into the temple, he cleanses the temple. Right? However, if you go back to Mark 11, you hold your place here. This Mark 11. So, let me point out one more thing about 21. 21:18. So just to get, we're trying to catch what's happening kind of in a chronological order. What does he do in verse 18 through 22? In Matthew 21:18 through 22, he curses the fig tree. All right, we'll talk more about that in just a minute, but I wanted you to just see this. So Matthew gives you, he enters the temple and cleanses it. And then he goes out and curses the fig tree. Come back to Mark. Mark does it a little differently, doesn't he? So if you go to Mark 11, we just read that, he went into the temple. However, let's read verse 12 and following. So verse 12 says, "On the following day, when he came to Bethany, he was hungry. And seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf," means it is bearing fruit, "he went to see if he could find anything on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. And he said to it, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard it. And then you go to 15, and what happens in 15? It cleanses the temple. So, all right, you're studying. How do you deal with this? What might appear at first to be a contradiction? How do you deal with it?
Well, Matthew doesn't really say it immediately.
He's only having a temper tantrum and cursing the tree that probably wasn't in season to bear fruit yet, and overturning the tables and stuff, you know, kind of. A lot of people would consider that he was, you know, having a temper tantrum or something.
Yeah. Well, before we get into the fig tree, just in a chronological order, how do you explain the difference between Matthew and Mark? What were you saying, Steve?
Oh, I was just saying that Matthew doesn't really give the indicator to say that it was immediately or how much time it passed or whether it was, as Mark indicated, the next day.
So, yeah, so that's it, I think. So Matthew, you notice he doesn't give us any chronological order, but Mark does. And Mark is very specific about it. Notice what he says in verse 11, on the following day. So I think what might seemingly be a difference here may not really be a difference. It's just in Matthew's gospel, he's not really worried about the chronological order of things. He's establishing his gospel to teach certain proofs about Christ, whereas Mark is really trying to give us some kind of chronological order, where he's very specific. On the following day, it's when Jesus cleanses the temple. So it seems from a study of the gospel, in Mark 11, Jesus comes on Monday into the temple. Did you note what he says in verse 11 when he comes? What time of day is he coming?
Evening
time. So he comes late in the day on Monday. Now remember from our study of time, the evening in the Jewish calendar was at the beginning of the day or the end of the day? The what? The end or the beginning period of the day. And then you would go through the morning period or the day period. And then the new day would begin when? In the evening of the following hour day. So he comes to the temple, he goes inside, and then he leaves. It's on his way, it appears. So it says that on the following day, he came to Bethany. On the following day, he's coming to Bethany. When it says the following day, so he leaves and goes back at nighttime, and he comes back the following day. What is he talking about? It'd be the morning period of the day. So they went home at night, back to Bethany, wherever they're staying. And then in the morning sometime, in the day period, he's coming back to Jerusalem. And it's at this time that he curses the fig tree. Now, and so you're still in our Monday period, but it's the day period of their day. So I know that's confusing, but it's the day period of their day, the light period. Another thing that's important to note here as we try to go through these things is So the fig tree. There seems to be two different episodes being talked about here. The first episode is when he actually curses the fig tree. Later in chapter 11, verse 20, is when they're coming back from the temple. So keep that in mind, and hopefully I can show you that as I move forward. So they've come back to the, and he sees this fig tree, and he curses it. Now, why does he do that? Well, he gives us a little bit more explanation when they see it again. Okay, so we'll get there in just a minute. Before he does that, though, in between the cursing of the tree and then the explanation is we have the cleansing of the temple. Now, I'm going to make it even more complicated for you. Anybody have a question up until now? This chronological order stuff is kind of confusing, I admit. Any questions of that stuff? All right, so when we talk about the cleansing of the temple, how many times did Jesus cleanse the temple?
Twice, I think.
I think it's actually twice. And this is something, again, that's debated. But it appears, from my study, and you go back and you study these, that he does it twice. There's what we read here, and then if you go and study the Gospel of John, John seems to point that there was an earlier cleansing that he did early on in his ministry. So it appears as though there's twice. You can go back in the Gospel of John and look at that. So I would say, my understanding is, this is his second cleansing of the temple. Now, I think it's significant that he does this in the last week. Why would that be important?
Ushering in the new covenant.
Also, I mean, what's he doing? What is he dealing with? He's dealing with our sin. Right? One of those areas was the temple, but also remember what the temple represents, both to him and to us. So let's just read 15 and following. And they came to Jerusalem, and he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold and those who bought in the temple. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold pigeons. He would not allow anyone to carry anything through the temple. So it's not as though he just turned the tables over and ran out. He's standing guard over the temple. I don't know if you've ever caught that before. But he says he's not would not allow anything through the temple. He was teaching them and saying to them, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations'?" That's also interesting, all the nations. "But you have made it a den of robbers." And the chief priests and scribes heard it and were seeking a way to destroy him, for they feared him, because all the crowd was astonished at his teaching. And when evening came, what happened? We transitioned to a new Jewish day. And when evening came, they went out of the city. So so he comes in and he overturns the tables, right? So what is all this about? What were all these people doing in the temple? Why were there money changers and people selling pigeons and other animals? Why were they even there?
Okay. That were coming, Jewish people, but they were from lots of other places. So I'm assuming that a lot of them found it easier to buy their sacrifices rather than bring them from home.
Okay.
So, and they were gonna, I mean, it was their holy week. They had festivals and traditional things that were going on every day. So it was crowded. A lot of people were there.
Mm-hmm. a lot.
And this is Monday, right?
Yes, yeah, so I believe this is the Monday, the second half of the, it'll be our Monday, their second day of the week.
We talked about the temple being, of course, the religious hub that it was, mm-hmm. but it was also a huge political hub. Mm-hmm. And if this is Monday, and we know what's going to happen Thursday night, Thursday afternoon, and Friday, all that stuff that was going on behind the scenes was going on too. I mean, Barabbas and the trial and, you know, all that traditional stuff that was going on, it was involved too. So it was a very busy place socially and politically as well as religiously.
Yeah, and by doing what he's, there's a lot more to say about the selling the doves and things and how they're cheapening the sacrifice, and there's so much there. Ooh, that's a whelp to thought. But politically, what has Jesus just done?
He had upset the normal way of doing things, at least according to the priests.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons why they were upset with him again.
And they were already upset with him, right? But what he's just done is turned the temperature up, hasn't he?
Criticism.
Oh, yeah.
People are in charge of the temple and the priests and all that, and they're at a time of the year when they were expected to shine because of the Passover, he was just telling them that they corrupted everything.
And it's interesting, when you read the Gospels, you get a message early on in Jesus' ministry several times of, it's not my time, it's not my time. When Jesus said to his mother in John chapter 2, and she said, you know, you go and you help out, what's his response to her? Woman, what is this to me? My time has not yet come. But that continues on. Several times you get throughout the Gospels, you get the message of things are not ready yet. Well, it's time. It's time. And so we are in the final few days. And part of it is he's turning up the temperature. He knows what the result of that's going to be. He understands that. And now it's like you've got a flame under a pot and you've just taken it and you've go ahead and open that valve up. You got that nice blue flame underneath. And so, Dwayne, do you have something?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, secular history says about this that one of the reasons why the priest and we're all upset with him again is because part of the money that was made in there went to them. And it even went to the Roman governor, although you don't hear anything about Pontius Pilate right now. But so that was just something else that was to them just the way they did business.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, young upstart is trying to mess up. And, you know, they act like they're pious, but they really weren't. It was business.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
I don't mean to make stuff of minor things. I mean, I think what Dwayne said is, you know, a really strong point. But what about in verse 11 where it says that when he had looked around upon all things? So what day would that have been? If on Monday is the day that he cleanses the temple?
So that was the first time he came in. That was before he cleansed it.
Right. So that would have been the day before. So that would have been Saturday.
So that would have been the day. So that would have been Sunday. Look at my timeline here. Yeah, that would have been Sunday, the first day of the week.
So, but would that, I mean, I think that's maybe, it's just odd that it says, and he looked around upon all things. Like, mm-hmm. For me, that's just like him, you know, he's examining things, he's taking it in. He doesn't act rashly. I've always thought it was like, that was a very rash thing, that you can just go in and turn over tables. But obviously, on Sunday, these people were still there, exchanging money and selling things, and he would have had to
Well, that's a great point, because he's come into the temple often. This isn't the first time he's been to the temple. And those money changers, there may be more of it going on now because it's the week of Passover. But it's not as though he couldn't have done this. And like I said, I believe he's done this twice, once early and now late. He could have done this many times. But I do think this is calculated. I think it's been planned. I think he knows he's getting a reaction out of it. And you'll see what he does after this to even increase that intensity of ire against him when he gets into the woes. This was, in many ways, a way to get the attention of the Pharisees. He's going to have it. We'll see that as we move forward. But again, yes, he was just there yesterday. He could have done this then. He didn't do that. He did it the next day. Okay. Anything else? All right. So so as we move along, so he comes in, he cleanses the temple. And then it says, when evening came, they went out of the city. So they leave Jerusalem. They're headed back, I'm assuming, to Bethany, the place they've been staying. The text tells us, verse 20, as they passed by in the morning, they saw the withered, they saw the fig tree withered away to its roots. And Peter remembered and said to him, Rabbi, look, the fig tree that you cursed has withered. So the previous day, he curses the tree. What does the text tell us in verse 14, the end of verse 14? When he curses the tree, what do the disciples do? What does it say about them?
They heard it.
It seems as though Mark is noting that for purpose, right? They took note of what he said. And that seems to definitely be true in verse 21, because the text tells us Peter remembered, right? They're walking by. They seem to be walking back the way they come. And then that tree catches Peter's eye, and he's like, oh. So is it that Jesus hated figs? Why curse this poor little tree? Well, it's to teach a lesson, right? He goes on to say, or verse 22, Jesus answered them, have faith in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. Now, the other text where that same idea is used is on what? If you have faith as a mustard seed, that same kind of imagery is used, right? Therefore, I tell you, you'll see, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. And whenever you stand praying, forgive for if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father who also is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses. What's the point of the fig tree? Is it some big elaborate prophecy of the end times? No. Okay.
Kind of like the Jewish religion had become. I mean, it was never meant to be a complete, you know, salvation, but you know, it had been so degraded by people.
Yeah, that's isn't that a wonderful illustrative way to present the message that you need to bear fruit, be a fruit bearer, right? Matthew chapter 7, you'll know them by their fruits. Verse 20 and or verse 22 and following, what's his point? Have faith in God. In other words, you saw what I did to the fig tree. It's just a little fig tree. but I cursed it, and the next day it's all withered up. How did that happen? By the power of God. Now imagine the power that you, that God could give to you to do great things. You tell a mountain to move, and it would move. I don't believe he's speaking idly there. It's not an idle statement. I think he's taking truly. And so really the whole lesson of it is about what God expects of the disciple. And it stands in stark contrast to the Jewish people and what they have become. And Jesus expected more out of his disciples and expects more out of us. Don't be an unfruitful fig tree. God expects fruit. So you have them see that. Again, now that's a broader lesson that we can learn from. Specifically in the moment, what purpose does it have with the disciples? Well, think about what they're getting ready to go through. Why would he provide them this lesson? Why would this lesson be important for them to hear?
Don't turn away from me, even though you're going to see me going through hard times.
Okay.
He's going to be gone.
What's that?
He's not going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I said, this is the end of his public ministry and more toward a crash course for the apostles.
It also kind of demonstrates his power over life and death.
Mm-hmm. We're going to focus a lot on what Jesus went through, rightly so. But he's not the only one going through stuff. Think about what's going to happen to those 12 men. And the real kind of upheaval they're going to have to deal with emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. One man's going to commit suicide over what he does. Another man is going to deny him 3 times, cursing while doing it. They're going to need something to come back to, aren't they? What's the anchor? Where's their anchor? It's in faith. How do they overcome? How do they come back? He's giving them something to hold on to, something to reach out for, a lifeline when they are deeply in despair, not over just Jesus' death, but over their guilt. I often wonder, the years afterwards, the months, the years after what Peter did, how did he survive those as a Christian? It's this kind of stuff. It's these lifelines Jesus throws out to him. Hold on. Don't let go. Remember the fig tree. Remember the power of God and how he can use you. And so the text says that, I'm a little bit behind here, that they travel back. It's the next day that they see the withered fig tree. Sorry, I forgot to put that up there. But as we march through here, we're seeing these things. And again, notice the intensity of the moment. All right, so after seeing the fig tree, he returns to the temple. Now think about what's happened. This is his, if I'm correctly understanding this, this is his third trip to the temple now. His third trip during the week. And so what did he just do the day before?
The temple.
Don't you wonder how many money changers and guys were out there? I wonder. Like, what does he see as he comes in? Are they still there? Or have they moved back in? Are they a little further down the street? Where are they at?
Probably
You can imagine he's hearing the things spoken. Right? What's going on? The crowd is all a murmur. And he returns back to the temple. Matthew 21 through chapter 23 really give us an extended dialogue over what happens. If we stay in Mark for just a moment, let's see. Wait, go down. Let's see, do I have the right verses here? I don't have the right verses. So if you come down to verse 27, and they came again to Jerusalem, and as he was walking in the temple, the chief priests and the scribes and the elders came to him, and they said to him, "By what authority are you doing these things? Or who gave you authority to do them?" Jesus said to them, "I will ask you one question. Answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things." Before we get into that, I mean, when they come and they ask about authority, what are they really asking about? And that's it. You can think about that over the next 2 weeks, and we'll come back. And when we come back, we'll go into Matthew's gospel, because, as I mentioned, he's turned the heat up. He's going to continue to turn the dial up. When you get into Matthew 23 and you read about all those woe unto you, woe unto you. He's heaping coals of fire on their head. But he's doing it not to embarrass them, I don't think, or to harm them in any way. He has an ends to what he's doing, and I think it's pretty important. So we'll continue looking at that. Again, thank you so much for your attention, and we'll dismiss from class and rejoin for our devotional time in just a second. Thank you.